Good morning, everybody. I hope you had a good sleep after our party yesterday evening. Our first talk will be from Thomas Mertz. Maybe you know another Thomas Mertz from the PDF Lib. He's not this guy. He's working for a company, Ethics, in Munich, which is involved in storage, GFS topics. And Thomas Mertz will speak about Samba's active HA clustering on shared storage with Samba. Go on.
Okay. So good morning, everyone. In my speech, I will tell you something about HA infrastructures in relationship to shared storage in different environments, shared storage in SAN environments, shared storage with cluster file systems and stuff. First of all, I will tell you a little bit about different infrastructure types and how storage virtualization plays with that fact. Then I will go directly to HA clustering, and I will tell you something about types and possibilities I have here about file system issues and file system problems which come up if I go to HA clustering, and which problems applications might have with getting cluster ready or getting failover ready. And I will tell you a little example about Samba and shared storage. First of all, classical data center infrastructure might look something like that. Normally, I have dedicated servers, and these dedicated servers have directly attached storage. That means that every server has its own portions of storage. Maybe these are internal drives, or maybe these are just the JBots or RAID systems, which are we are external SCSI buses connected to that storage. And normally, they share all the very same LAN. So I have some problems which come up with this infrastructure here. The first of all is if I want to scale a service, for example, this is a node running a database, this is a node running a file server. If I want to scale up, for example, the file server, and I want to add storage, I have really to take disks and put it to this server here. If I would need a part of the storage, for example, here, I have no chance. I would have to give here another storage shelf or another disk or whatever. So the storage is bound to the servers. The same thing comes up if I want to scale up the CPU performance, scale up RAM performance on these servers. I just have to put them into a dedicated one. And if you can imagine, what happens here is that the end of scaling is relatively fast reach because I can put in here maybe two or four processors, but this is the end. So this infrastructure is not really scalable. For example, if I need more storage than the system can handle, I would have to set up another, a second node, which serves, for example, my files. The next thing is that I have a complete communication, normally using a LAN, not using the very same LAN, but at least using a LAN. If I want to do backup here in this structure, I normally have to do the backup using the LAN here, or I have to do backup in the way that I put a storage library or a tape drive to each server and put tapes in and backup them locally. This is not a very nice thing. And if it comes to catastrophe precautions, which means that my data center might burn down or that I might have water in the data center, all my data might be lost. It's very difficult in such an infrastructure to transfer all the data automatically in the background to a second data center. To which I could switch all my services to in case of a failure so that I might not have to take my backup tapes, drive them to a secondary data center and play them onto the servers again, but just to switch over the connection and just to work on the second data center. This is a very difficult setup to do with such an infrastructure because I would have to do host-based replication from this host to another one in the secondary data center, which is a very complicated administrative task because you have to do it on the very own machines all the time. The next thing which comes there is that you normally don't have the high performance on the way to the other storage, to the other data center, if you're going over such an infrastructure. So you are forced to do asynchronous copying of the data, which means that you can't guarantee that the data on the secondary side is identical to the data on the first side. So it might happen that you have data corruption on your way to the backup side, but you don't notice. And in case you have to switch over, you might be wondering. That's why we normally separate the storage from the servers and use a dedicated storage network between. So now we have one layer of servers and one layer of storage. What's the big thing about that? The big thing is that I have a virtualization here. I can now take slices of this storage and present it to different hosts. If I have the problem that this host here, the left one, doesn't see enough storage anymore, I just take another slice of storage from here and present it to the host. A very nice thing which comes as a plus is that I can do my backup now within the SAN. I don't have to go the way over all the application servers over there and use the LAN to do a backup, but I can do the backup within the SAN. This is what we normally call, Opala, a LAN-free backup. Certain kind of serverless backup is also possible because if I have the intelligence on my storage system and some measures are taken, I can now backup storage which I have here, partitions which I have here, without the interference of the application host. This is what makes a kind of serverless backup. If I have enough money, and this I normally have if I have built up such an infrastructure, I can use storage-based replication from one data center to the other, which means that if I want to replicate storage to a secondary data center, I don't have to go the way over the application hosts to do the copying. I just do it within the storage system. And if I do it within the storage system, I can guarantee that the data which is on the second side, so in the second data center, is identical to the storage I have here. This is because I can do synchronous copying if I have the appropriate bandwidth. A very nice thing which comes as a plus is that I'm now able to build up services which don't rely on local disks in the service up there, because I can put everything, even the operating system, into the SAN, and I can boot up all my machines directly from the SAN. This means that all these machines over here don't need their local configuration anymore. I can do the configuration on a single system image and boot up all these machines from this kind of single system image. Performance for storage access is now not, does now not rely on a LAN-based connection, but it's just the way how the connection is done between the service and the storage. If I have multiple connections and multiple presentations of the same storage slice to the SAN network, I can reach a very good performance, even if multiple servers are accessing the same storage system or even accessing the very same physical location on the system. But I will come back to that later on when I tell you something about GFS. So, for what is that used? Of course, for HA clustering. HA clustering, because it's now very easy for me to present a partition from one server to the next. Because if I have direct attached storage, I would have to power down a server. I would have to plug out the drives or plug out the JBOD shelf. I would have to transport the JBOD shelf to another node. I would have to plug it in again. I would have to boot up the server again. What I can do now with such a configuration is just a configuration change on the storage. Please present this partition or this drive to another host, and the storage will do, and the other host will see it and can use it. Of course, I can do high-performance clustering. That's what I mentioned with the different kinds of interconnection infrastructure I build up there. I can build up storage clusters. Storage clusters in the means of that I can use the very same physical location serving multiple servers in parallel and even single system configurations. This is what we call diskless shared root clustering. This will be on the last slide of this presentation. Storage virtualization is a big issue if it comes to a configuration like that. Storage virtualization means that my host and my application does not see the real physical structure which is between the host and the storage system. A first level of virtualization is a very easy one. That's, for example, a RAID set. A RAID set is, as you might all know, a collection of two, three, or more disks which are presented to a host as a single physical drive. This is some kind of virtualization. Virtualization within a SAN goes far beyond that. You normally have different paths between your hosts and your storage. Normally you have at least two, but you can have even three or four or five or six ways from your host to the very same storage. Normally your operating system would now see the same physical location on the storage system as two, three, four, five, six different drives. There comes some kind of software virtualization. The software component normally sees all the physical connections between the host and the storage and presents only one of them, or a virtual one of them, to the host. If there is a breakdown in communication on the actual physical path it is using between the storage and the host, it can transparently switch over to another connection and can even do load balancing without the notice of the host. So that's for catastrophe precaution and for performance issues, this is a very big thing. Another point of virtualization is what I already mentioned, that you can do with a software switch now, change the presentation of drives from one location to the other. This is very nice because you can do transparent, on-the-fly reconfiguration of your system, and you can even do hierarchical storage management. So you can move data from a very expensive or a very fast storage system to a or part of the storage system to a not so fast one, to a not so expensive one, without the notice of the hosts which are accessing the drives if it goes very good. Another point or another thing of storage virtualization is, of course, a file system if it comes to clustering. If I'm talking about shared storage clustering with a cluster file system, I refer to Red Hat's global file system, which was mentioned yesterday in Volker Lendecke's speech as well. Just to come back to that, all nodes see this GFS file system as their as a local file system, but in the end, multiple nodes, up to some hundred ones in theory, can share this file system and can parallelly and concurrently access this file system without corrupting it. In opposite to other file server implementations, this file system does not have a dedicated file server, so there's no single point of failure because all nodes, all GFS nodes in a standard GFS configuration share the management and share the access and the duties and the rights to access the file system among each other. So if one of these file servers fails, normally nothing should happen. This file server is just moved out of the cluster, and it's automatically tried to reboot the system and to reintegrate it. If it doesn't work, okay, it doesn't work, nothing will happen, just the server is down, but all the others will have exactly the same view to the file system as they had before. This consistency between the servers is done via a dedicated locking network, so there are different server instances running to guarantee that all servers have the lock status of different files, of different directories, all together in one point so that they all see the same, so that they can't do data corruption. It was mentioned yesterday that in Volker Lendecke's speech that about 300 nodes are possible within such a GFS configuration. That's theoretically true, but I've never seen a configuration like that. Red Hat says they have something running about 120, 130 nodes. The biggest thing we have implemented in our work with GFS is about 30 nodes. And there you have to be very, very careful because you can slow down GFS with about three or four nodes if you don't know about implementation issues which come if you're implementing GFS. That's why you can't use an application. For example, you have written an Apache application on a single node system and you now want to transfer it to a cluster one. It can happen that it just breaks down, that it doesn't work, or that it's so slow that you think, what the fuck is going on? What's that for a file system? That's because a locking issue in GFS, if you have very small files within a directory tree, GFS locks parts of this directory tree to grant access only to one host at a time. And if multiple hosts are accessing multiple files within that structure, all the hosts are slowed down because they have to be served one by one, one after another. If you, for example, have some session ID configurations with some thousand session ID files within one directory, you might wonder how slow the system might go. There are different and many more things which have to be taken into consideration when moving applications from such a file system to a cluster file system, so that's not a very easy task. Okay, HA clustering. Normally we have two different ways of HA clustering. This is the active-passive way or the active-active way. In an active-active way, I normally have one host who serves an application and another one waiting for the first one to fail so that it can take over the service. This is normally done with remounting a file system from one host to the other, but there are, also, of course, other ways to do so. Active-active clustering normally means that I have two hosts and two hosts are running. These two hosts can serve the same applications. For example, I can have two hosts serving somewhere in NFS, but they are normally serving different locations. That means they don't give concurrent access to the very same location. So I do. So for example, I export share 1, share 2, share 3. We are the one active server and share 4 to 6 with another server. If I have now to do a failover, I just switch over all the serving to one of the nodes. This has the problem that this one node now has to do double or three times the work it had to be done before. And it has the problem that if I have related services, for example, if I have shared access to the physical same location via NFS and SEMBA, and only SEMBA fails, I have to fail over NFS as well, because if I have a single host file system, I have to move both services which rely on the very same file system to another node. This has to be taken into consideration. To avoid performance issues in such a cluster environment, I can use N+1 clustering or N+2 clustering, whatever. In this scenario, I have one or two or three or whatever more nodes than necessary in my system. And if I have to do a failover because my server broke down, I don't move my application to a server which is already actively serving an application, but I use one which is sleeping in the moment. For such a configuration and a normal file system, all the rules and limitations apply as in a two-node easy scenario. If I have a failover system, I might now say, okay, it's very nice because if I have to do maintenance on one server, I just can initiate a failover and move my services to the other node, and I can, for example, change my RAM, the system change the network card of this now to be down server. This is not the case because normally I have different kinds of connections, as you heard yesterday, and if I have connections which are not stateless, this is, first of all, a thing which cannot be transferred in a very easy way from one node to the other. You might get data corruption if you are moving such a connection just from one node to the other. And even if it's not the way some applications have problems when moving from one location to the other, so manual failover should not be part of the daily business of an administrator, but should only be done in scenarios where it's really necessary and only when no or at least not very much traffic is done on the service, not very much access is done on the service. Otherwise, you might get into trouble. Okay, think about exclusive or parallel data access. If I have a standard file system, I can't mount this one on two or more nodes, but this is exactly this is needed. This mounting on different nodes so that I can share data. So now I have three possibilities. I can replicate the data between the different nodes, which means I have some host-based software running which moves my files and my stuff from one node to the other, and I can hope that it's fast enough that in case of a failover, all things are already written on the secondary system, and I have to rely on that it's fast enough and that I don't have too many volumes I have to replicate, otherwise this is a very, very slow job. Then I can use a standard single host file system, which I mount ping pong from one host to the other, or I use a cluster file system like GFS, which is permanently mounted on all hosts. A standard single file system, to mount it ping pong, you normally need shared storage, so a SAN or a shared SCSI bus. Shared SCSI bus has some limitations, some very hard limitations. XAN is very easy to use to present the very same physical locations to different servers. This can be very dangerous in case of a standard single host file system, because if I present it to multiple hosts, no one will recognize, but they will, no one will stop you from doing so, but you will corrupt your file system. So in a case of failover, I have to transfer the single host file system very reliable from one location to the other. This must be supported, and supported very reliable by the failover software. If I have a cluster file system permanently mounted on all hosts, I don't have this limitation. What I normally need is a shared storage on a SAN basis. I can do this using GNBD servers in another way as well, so I do not need the SAN, but I have the problem that if I do such a configuration, which is often done just to test GFS, that it's for failover scenarios, very, very complicated to set up, and it's not that fail-proof than it is as if I have direct SAN access. For now, if I use a cluster file system which is permanently mounted on all hosts, I, of course, don't have to do any remounts anymore. That means I don't have this errorous unmount and hoping that the file system really has been unmounted and can be cleanly mounted on the other host. And so in this way, this gets, first of all, very fast, because all the servers see the very same physical location for all the time. And the next thing is, nothing can happen if two hosts mount the file system in parallel. It's made for mounting in parallel. What I can do now, technically, is concurrently writing into the very same file. But this is not really supported by most applications, because most normally you need a locking mechanism on your application basis, which looks that no real concurrent write is done to the very same file. Otherwise, your file will get corrupted. GFS doesn't control what applications have a file open and write into it. It just will see that the file system doesn't get corrupted. But if the file itself is suitable for the application after that anymore, that's not looked after. What I can normally do is read the same file from a different servers within the cluster. This is not a big problem. I will show an example later on for that. Active load balancing is possible using every cluster node. This is true in some instances, because it does rely on the application. If I have Apache, for example, it's quite easy to do active load balancing. If I have an application like Samba, this is not that easy. So active load balancing with Samba is very restricted. This, I think, is a thing which I already told. If I now have a GFS system beneath my cluster infrastructure or beneath my failover infrastructure, I have to do access control on my application layer, on, for in our example, on the Samba layer. Otherwise, you will really access the very same physical location in concurrent. The number of cluster nodes in such a scenario is theoretically not limited, or is not limited in the range of 10, 20, 30, 40 nodes. It's limited in the fact that in the design of your application, in the design, in the way you use it, as I mentioned before, if you have very much small files within one directory, GFS might get into problems. And the next thing is that normal failover software doesn't support n numbers of nodes. Red Hat Cluster Suite, for example, has, I think, about 60 nodes, which can be put together into one cluster. So you are limited by the use of the failover software to a certain number of nodes within your failover cluster infrastructure. Coming to two different failover softwares, what you can often find in data centers is Service Guard from HP and Red Hat Cluster Service. There are, of course, many, many more, but I will use this one for a short example on how different services are implemented, or services are failed over using different failover mechanisms. If you have HP Service Guard, you normally have, in the case of Samba, one SMBD instance running per node. And the only thing you do if you're doing a failover from node A to node B is to take the share configuration of the node to be failed over, and you include it into the configuration file of the active one running on the active node, and you just do a reload. This is quite easy to do, but has, of course, some limitations because you are forced to have a very clean configuration, and you have to have a configuration with only one Samba service running with one global section with the configurations you can do there. If you, and what you do if you're failovering, you'd normally have IP addresses which you use for access to your shares. And if you now move from one node to the other, this Samba service has to serve both IP addresses. What now happens is that if one of your clients connects to the wrong IP address, to the IP address which doesn't belong to the shares because they have failed over, and you do a refailover to the appropriate node, then access might be lost. So this is not a very nice thing because it can cause some trouble with your users if you have no standard operation procedures in which this is clearly defined how this has to work. Red Hat Cluster Service does it a little bit different. Red Hat Cluster Service really starts new services on the node with the configuration of the system which has failed over. So there is no import of configuration to an existing one and a reload, but there's a real restart of another application instance or another version of the service with this new configuration file. So this is very nice because in this fact, you have a very clean configuration of your services, and you don't have to consider that one service has to be configured to serve the other as the other does. So this is, I think it's a quite cleaner way to get all this failover stuff done. Coming to Service Guard and Red Hat Cluster Service, to get HP Service Guard serving Samba correctly, you have to patch it. There's no way without. And if you're running it with GFS, there is even more patching to be done because Service Guard has no real feature to avoid to try remounts and mounts, which you don't need if you have a cluster file system beneath. And it's from configuring it, it's quite uncomfortable, in my point of view, to use it on a GFS infrastructure because it's a build-up for single-host file systems, and in this way, the configuration has to be placed. So this is not such a nice thing. Red Hat Cluster Service is more flexible in this point of view because, but not only, I don't have to do so much script code patching to get Samba correctly running, and I don't have to do so much script patching to get it running with a GFS infrastructure beneath. Thing is that Red Hat bought GFS some time ago from Sistina, and they have implemented Druid or a configuration software into the Red Hat cluster service so that you can configure your GFS system basically that it works automatically with the Red Hat cluster suite. So stuff like unmounts, mounts, the location and replication of internal data files is done only if you don't have a GFS. It's handled differently if you are on a GFS infrastructure. This is all done very reliable and automatically within the Red Hat cluster suite, and it's a very nice thing, so it's quite easier to use with a GFS beneath. To come to an example, very easy example. It's not really using Service Guard or Red Hat Cluster. It's just an example to show how a cluster file system, a shared cluster file system, can work with an application so that you have concurrent view to the very same location. And to play around a little bit with features, this is example is meant to be. So I have a common file system, which is now in this case Mount GFS Samba, which is on SAN storage, and all these machines here, all these servers, servers 1 to 4, see exactly this directory tree. Share 1 2Share5 are now within some subdirectories. It's just a very easy example. And some internal stuff for Samba is in a dedicated directory, which is now GFS Samba internal. So there are parts of the Samba configuration, for example. What I now want to do is I want to serve my applications very easily. I don't want to have to reconfigure my system if I move from one server to the other. So the thing is, I don't want to have to tell my Samba daemon, for example, where its configuration lies, depending on which server the service is started. That's what GFS offers, for example, with context-dependent path names. I can now go and say, okay, I have a directory which has the name global, and in this directory global, my server 1 sees an smb.conf, for example. And if I have server 2 and it accesses the global, it sees an smb.conf2. Because we are on a shared file system, so they normally see all the same things. But sometimes I don't want that, and in this case, I don't want that. So I make a context-dependent path name, which means if, for example, server 1 accesses the directory global, it physically accesses the directory server 1. The same thing happens with server 2. If it accesses global, it will end up in server 2. And so I can virtually access the same smb.conf file, for example, but physically I go to different ones. And this I can use very easy for configuration, for example. I can do this context-dependent path naming with server names. I can do it with UIDs, so I can redirect requests depending on the UID, depending on the GID, dependent on the OS version, and stuff like that, and combinations. This is a very, very nice thing because now I have the possibility to just show parts of the directory tree to different servers or different services without having to make them a known file system, but I can keep it in the very same file system. To continue with this very easy example, I now just define share configurations within my shared internal configuration directory. Very easy configurations for the different shares. And I now have different smb.conf files. For example, for my server 1, he accesses it via the default location, MountGFS Samba Global. This can, of course, be somewhere else. And if he accesses this global directory, he really accesses MountGFS Samba Server 1 and then this configuration file. And all stuff I do is, because I have shared storage, I include my share configurations, and I now can reload my configuration and serve these locations defined in Share 1 and Share 2. If I do the very same on my Server 2, and I include the Share2.conf configuration as well, and I reload my service, all two servers, so server 1 and server 2, will see this share 2. They will have concurrent access to this share, or they won't have, as I mentioned, access control to it. So you can use that, of course, if you have an application, if you have a setup which doesn't corrupt the data which is on there. For example, if you just do read access on these shares, or if you have another locking mechanism which prevents the application to really write in concurrent to the file. But it's possible from the technical point of view. When it comes to load balancing, this now might look like that you could do load balancing. You can do load balancing in a quite different way in such a configuration, because you can very easily, as you have seen in this configuration, you can very, very easily move, for example, a share from one host to the other. So if you see, oh, I have an issue on server 1 because there is high load on share 1, and so I want to just put share 2 and share 3, for example, to another server, it's now not a big deal because I just have to change the configuration on one or two other nodes who should serve this share 2 or share 3. I have to reload it, and I have to take care that that no concurrent access is possible if I want to. The thing which I have to consider is how the access is actually done on the IP base. This is another thing, but it's very easy to move the presentation of the share from one server to the other to avoid performance issues. If I have normal active-active configurations with a not shared file system, but a single host file system, it's not that easy because all my application serving is bound to dedicated file systems. So I normally can only do a very manual and a very rude, a very basic kind of load balancing so that I say, okay, if I have two very hard accessed shares and two not so hard accessed shares, I won't put the very hard accessed ones on one server and the sleeping shares on another, so I have to do it before. And when I plan my design, this is not really necessary if you have a cluster-wide file system because you can transparently move the presentation of these shares from one node to the other. You can build up similar solutions, of course, with services like NFS. You can do it with Apache. You can do it with SendMail stuff. You can do it with MySQL. With MySQL, it's a little bit dangerous because MySQL really doesn't like if you have multiple nodes writing through the very same database files. What's normally possible is to have a single write and a multiple read. This usually goes well, but it's the same restrictions come up in such a configuration here that you have to that you can't say, okay, I have an application running on my single host, and I move it to a cluster file system, and now it has to work. You have to take the design of your application into consideration, and maybe, and this will happen, you have to do slightly changes so that it works on an infrastructure like that. A very nice thing about Xaan-based storage clustering is that you can build up shared root clusters in a diskless manner. You can now remove, or you don't need local file system on local disks anymore to have a working cluster configuration. What you can do is you can completely boot your servers from the SAN, and you can very easy add and remove servers during the system is running from a cluster configuration. So it's, for example, possible if you have a mail server cluster, which does, for example, virus checking and spam checking, and you see that you have problems with fulfilling all the requests because there's huge spam coming in, you can easily add multiple servers to this cluster configuration just from telling the cluster that there are now two more servers, which IP addresses they have and stuff like that, and you boot the service directly up from the SAN. In the SAN, there is the operating system, there's all the information they need to join the cluster, and within minutes, they can be used as additional mail servers. Even if you have these servers in the moment in another configuration running, for example, in a web server environment running, but you don't need the CPU power in the moment, but you need it for your mail stuff, you can just put them out of your Apache cluster, for example, without interrupting the Apache cluster. It runs on all the other nodes without interruption, and you just reboot the servers with a different role, and so they are now mail servers. And if the spam load is, for example, over, you can just switch them transparently back. It's a very, very nice feature. It's, of course, not very easy to implement, and it needs some special treatment to the GFS system, but it really works, and it works reliable. If you're interested in stuff like that, you can go to the redhat.com website for an English-speaking article about that, or to the redhat.de website for the German version. The German version is a little bit shorter because it's in the version from the IX publication, Aus dem Poolschöpfen, from IX number 11 of 2004, which two colleagues of me wrote. The one of the English version is a little bit bigger and has some more explanations given. A very nice thing which I forgot to do if you have such a shared root cluster is that you normally can just make your updates to the system on one system. You don't have to make the updates to to every single system, but most of the updates you can do only one time, and you just and they are automatically deployed because it's a single system image to all the other servers. It has to be taken into account that some that you just can't use standard RPMs to play them onto the system because you have to take care of certain GFS issues, as I mentioned before. But if you have these RPMs ready, you can just very easily deploy them to the system so you don't have to manage 30 or 40 hosts. You can just manage one instead of, and it's automatically deployed to all the other nodes. Are there any questions to that topic? Yes. Okay. The thing is that Red Hat bought Sistina, the manufacturer of GFS, and before Red Hat bought GFS, it was supported on SUSE and it was supported on Red Hat and I don't know on something else. Now Red Hat says, okay, we want to sell our Red Hat stuff, so we only support GFS if it's on a Red Hat basis. So, yes, there are installations on other...
So you got to pull it out of the source RPMs and patch it yourself or something?
When it was Sistina, time ago, they had ready to run RPMs for SUSE and for Red Hat and stuff. But you can, of course, take the source and make your own stuff. But Red Hat only supports it if you are running on Red Hat nowadays.
I have only two short questions. How did you configure the Quorum device for the Red Hat cluster?
And for the
Quorum device
for
the Red Hat cluster, how did you configure it?
How do I configure it?
Yeah, as far as I know, it needs a block device, a network block device or a block device for the Quorum device.
The failover system?
For the Red Hat cluster.
If you have a dual node system, yes, you have to use one, yeah? So you just build it up like anything else. So no big deal.
Yeah, okay, that was the point of the question. Was it easy to do? And the other one is just about the GFS license. It was commercial some time ago, as far as I remember. Is it now included if you buy a commercial Red Hat distro, or do you need an extra license?
And the first time it was free of charge. Yeah. Then they had this... money issue, and they wanted to make money, so they had for different versions of GFS, they had the different licenses. Now you have to buy support licenses, Red Hat satellite licenses, so that you are allowed to do the downloads of the stuff. But yes, you have to buy licenses in a certain kind of way to run it, supported by Red Hat. If you don't want the support and you compile it yourself, you don't need any license.
One more question.
Only a short answer. It's under the GPL, so you can get the source and stuff like that. Another question.
If you find them, yeah.
Yeah. do you have any information about Lustre, the novel SUSE stuff? Do you have some?
No.
Some experience? No. Okay.
Da kannst du. Ich erkläre dir nachher.
Accidentally, I can answer that. I made an inquiry at SUSE Novell about a month ago about Lustre, and after some digging, I was told explicitly that it's not for production use. Sorry.
It's funny to hear because some big institutions in America use it on a big scale.
And what about ECLs?
They are supported.
They are supported, but you have version 6.0, and there must be a new version, 6.1.
6.1 is not out now officially.
Yeah.
It's a thing which is in beta test, but I haven't seen that one.
Okay, we have to go further. Thanks a lot for your talk.